Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Most of us are up to our elbows planning for retirement. You may not, though, have in mind the crucial complementary step, legacy planning. My next guest says you should be passing on money and assets to your next generation rather than disputes. And there have been recent cases of spectacular disputes amongst families, like the case that hit headlines on March the 10th this year of the grandson wrestling for full claim of 20% of his grandfather's estate, which Mr. Lim Kun Yu, at age 75, had decided should go only to his grandsons, born to his sons, but not his daughters, and only to grandsons in the custody, care and control of his sons. And there's a further condition as well of grandsons born, I think, within 21 years of his death. We'll also take a look at a case where disputes erupted after a wealthy widow who did not make plans before Alzheimer's took over her mind. She was caught in a bitter tussle amongst her children as they vied to manage her 17 properties and sizable savings. So today we're talking about why you need to plan ahead and how to do so with a will or an LPA. Justin Chan is a managing partner for Justin Chan Chambers. Good morning, Justin. Thank you for joining us.
Morning, Michelle. Always happy to be here.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. Straight up, why do you think we need to plan ahead with a will or LPA? Are we doing enough of that here in Singapore?
Short answer is no. We all know that. Short answer is no. For a document, a will or an LPA, which is one of the cheapest legal documents that you can create. I think not enough people are doing it. And it's important to do it because it ensures a few things. It ensures where your money is going to go after you pass away. It ensures that that money is in the place of a trusted executor and trustee. And, of course, the prevention of disputes. Make it clear who you want to benefit, who you don't want to benefit, and why.
All right. Since we're going to be talking about these two very interesting but different cases, I thought we'd start with just the difference between a will and an LPA, and which is cheaper to put together?
They usually come in a package, to be honest. I think there are lots of law firms who just sort of slam dunk them together, will plus LPA drafting. The key difference is that the will comes into effect when you pass away, and LPA comes into effect when you lose mental capacity.
Got it. So both, LPA just means I appoint someone who can act as my representative?
Yes, as your deputy, if you are mentally and or physically unable to handle your own assets and affairs.
And is that person also the executor of the will?
It doesn't need to be, but it can be.
Okay. And with lasting power of attorney, do you also decide who gets control of what assets?
Okay. For the lasting power of attorney, it's more a deputy-driven exercise. And who do you want to be your deputy, right? And that person usually has control over the entirety of your assets and affairs. But at the time that you pass away, your will kicks in. So then those assets are distributed according to what you say in the will.
Okay. And you mentioned these two things. You know, we're Money FM, so I have to ask a money question. You say these two things can be put together in a package rather cheaply. What do we mean by cheaply, Justin?
I can only give ballpark figures in case any of my learned friends come up to me. But for a simple will and LPA, usually below 1,000. I mean, we're talking hundreds. We're not talking thousands, okay. Usually.
Mm-hmm. But it, of course, depends on the complexity of the estate and all that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll say it starts from 1,000. The whole point of the show is trying to understand why we need to plan ahead with a will or an LPA. Let's take a look at these two cases. So let's start with the one that hit headlines earlier this month, March 10th, really, of this man who failed in his claim to vie for an inheritance left by a grandfather to the male line of grandsons only. It's a very convoluted case, but when you look at it, what do you take from it in terms of why we need to plan ahead?
I was looking at this, and I think the most luminous point here is this. When the next of kin contests a will, the one person who knows the truth of the matter is no longer around. So there's always room for interpretation of any sort of, you know, terms which may not be crystal clear. So in this particular case, what's interesting is that there was a will and there was a codicil. A codicil is a document which sort of, you know, amends certain terms of the will. So the contesting grandson here managed to prove that he was a grandson according to Clause 5 of the will. He was excluded by Clause 1I of the codicil.
Wow.
Because he was not in the custody, care and control of his son, his father at that point in time. So when you have that, what I picked up was that when the codicil was done, that this grandson was already born. So he could, the testator, in this case the deceased, could very well have named the grandson explicitly, right? I want to benefit this grandson, blah, blah, blah. Then there would have been no question whatsoever. So I always tell my clients, if there is something fundamental, something big that happens in your life, just do another will. Mm-hmm. Don't have a codicil, then you have two documents which can murky the waters. In Singapore, the Singaporean context, the newest will is the effective one.
Very interesting. I did not know this. So then why would you have a codicil?
Sometimes people think it's a savings of cost. Sometimes it's a saving of time. Sometimes it's a will that's 6 pages, but I only want to change one clause.
Mm.
You know, it's convenient. It's slightly more convenient. But as you can see, the trade-in for convenience was probably a year-long, maybe two-year battle in court.
Yeah. So this guy, the 75-year-old who's passed on, was trying to plan ahead 21 years forward from his death. So that's why he put all these conditions in versus names, right? Because some of them weren't even born yet, the grandsons.
Correct.
Okay. So the key understanding here is make clear who you want to benefit in your will and update your will if you change your mind as you go along. That's the safest route versus a codicil.
Yes. The currency of the will is most important. You must, it should reflect the circumstances that are most current to you, right? And there is circumstances where, you know, you're already quite old. There are issues of whether you have the mental capacity. I think this is where doctors need to enlist the subject matter experts, and in this case, the geriatric specialists. So for anybody who's old and infirm, so to speak, if you want to affirm a will, I think both a doctor and a lawyer needs to look at it and look at you, right? So the geriatric specialist can certify that you do have the mental capacity to sign this will, to affirm this will.
I'm going to put my devil's advocate hat on. Can a family member sort of misuse this and get a geriatric specialist to declare you incapacitated in some way as a means of disputing what your wishes are? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what the benefit would be of having a geriatric specialist ratify the will. Because, say, I'm dying at 75, and I know that I have maybe half the bag of marbles, but I still want my wishes to be respected. Why would I ask for a geriatric doctor to be in the room?
Because it decreases the opportunity to contest the will. So a lot of this is, and thanks for that, this verbal sparring that we always have. At the end of your life, right, looking back, your next of kin wants to contest the will, they would need doctors to sort of, who have never seen you, right, to look back at your medical records and infer that you did not have mental capacity. But if you were certified together with the signing of the will that you were mentally competent, the guy with immediate knowledge is there. The geriatric specialist who actually saw you can hold his hand to his heart and say, yes, the man knew what he was signing. And that evidence is stronger than people down the line, doctors down the line, who haven't actually seen you.
Wow, this is riveting stuff. Is it possible to ever put together an ironclad will in Singapore, Justin?
When you mean ironclad in terms of will it survive a trial, probably. But don't forget, in Singapore, people sue each other for almost anything. And anyone. So, I mean, in this case, there was a lawyer on board, you know, and even then they decided that, okay, we'll challenge the will. The lawyer became a witness.
Oh, my.
Luckily, Justice Philip Jayaratnam, you know, like, found favor with his evidence, and the will was proved at the trial of the matter. But boy, was there a long contest before that.
Yes, it's a very twisty case, this one. Lots of twists and turns. But so our listeners have some sense of closure. The grandson who was wrestling for full claim, what happened to him?
So, like I mentioned previously, he was part of the class considered in the will, being a grandson born 21 years from the time of the deceased passing. But he failed the second requirement in the LPA, which was he needed to be in care, custody, control of the father. Right. So this the testator was extremely sort of male heir orientated, if you will.
Yeah. Okay. Let us then move to our second case, where there was the issue of, I'm looking for the case here. Wealthy widow, didn't make plans, Alzheimer's hit, and then her children are vying to manage her 17 properties and sizable savings. What a tussle. What did you take from this case?
Don't wait too long. You know, in our society, there is sort of a procrastination about doing wills. It may be a superstitious element, or it may be an exercise in negativity, but it never is. It's an exercise in preparation. I will always remember this one case where the person who had lost mental capacity, her friends on the one, the warring parties were her friends on the one hand and her family on the other. It was bitter. I mean, we were talking about scuffles in the family court, waiting area and things like that. And to me, it was sad when I looked at the person herself, and she didn't recognize either of the warring parties. She didn't know who her friends were. She didn't know who her family was. You know, these people that were bitterly contesting it, she did not recognize. So when you are still mentally capable, choose the people that you trust. Choose the people that you trust to deal with your assets, and do that at the time that you can decide clearly. And I think that's the takeaway when I see cases like WLR versus WLT.
Fantastic case there. Very, very sad. As you say, people avoid putting together a will for all sorts of reasons in Asia, some of which is, you know, people think it's bad luck to associate with any issue of death or anything like that. Apart from luck, what also I think we're all obsessed with, at least here on Money FM, is money. And I hear you can avoid tax if you divide real estate via a will. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no estate duty in Singapore. It's been removed for quite a few decades now.
Okay. And, are you seeing more people trying to do this, avoid tax and divide real estate via a will?
I don't think that tax savings are the driving force. I do see sort of a slight increase in the number of wills being done, but that's more, I think, because people are less caught up with the stigma of doing a will. You know, there is pessimism or it's bad luck. I think people are slightly more enlightened now and understand that they need to prepare for the time that their mortality is questioned.
Okay. So if there are people out there thinking, what should I do if I want to put together a will that expresses my wishes? What are some tips, Justin, for how to do so?
Yeah. Funnily enough, I'm dealing with one of those cases right now. And what people need to know, leaving aside all the technical requirements, right? That's what you hired a lawyer for. The sort of the easiest version of this is to have three things on your mind, okay, when you do a will. The first is, what do you have? Number one. Number two, who do you want to give it to, right? And in considering who you want to give it to, why you want to give it to this person, okay? Number three, for those who are not going to benefit, those that you are not giving anything to, why are you denying them? And if you have these three things on your mind, right, then you can instruct your lawyer clearly on your will.
That's really great. What you have, who you want to give it to, and why? And for those that you're not going to give it to, do you have to? I mean, let's say you want to exclude people. You just didn't like them. They were nasty. They were jerks. You don't want to give them anything. Do you have to justify it in your will?
Well, I mean, you know, you can look. I've done wills giving hundreds of thousands to cats. So, you know, a will is not invalid because it's capricious or it's odd. You know, As long as you know why you were not giving, why you were benefiting your cat as opposed to another family member, as long as you have that reason, right, you're good.
Okay, this is very, very enlightening. You just have to have a reason, though. You can't just say, I would like to give $100,000 to my cat.
You don't need to explicitly state the reason in the will, although it will help. It helps on two levels. The first level is that the court, if your will is contested, has something to bite on, right? They can actually read it and try and like figure out the language that you're using and what you actually intended. The second thing is make it clear why you're not going to benefit or going to benefit somebody is your last sort of written word on the matter, right? Imagine that this is going to be read by someone 5 years down the road, right, and you're long gone. At least if you stated the reason, it's clear they will be like, oh, right, okay, I mean, I don't agree, but at least I kind of understand what the old man or old lady wanted.
I see. I should stop going down this route because I can just feel somebody writing me out of their will as we speak. Justin, can the legal rep, I want to go back to the LPA, move away from wills, can the legal rep for an LPA be disputed?
Absolutely. Sometimes the deputy is, you know, he doesn't perform his duties properly. Remember, the deputy must always act in the best interests of the beneficiary, which is the person who's lost capacity. Sometimes he's committed some form of wrongdoing, you know, even worse than being slow in his duties, he's actually committed some kind of fraud or some kind of breach of duty. Yeah, in those cases, the court will take that into consideration. It is a very high burden to be a deputy. There are lots of checks and balances, and a lot of it is based on, I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, there was that tour guide who stole several million from an old lady.
Mm, yes.
So, I mean, the courts are very cautious because LPAs can be used as an instrument of fraud.
Interesting. This is such an important topic, but as you say, a lot of people shy away for many reasons from putting together a will, and we're all about literacy, financial literacy on this show. One of the reasons we often hear people when they brush it aside and procrastinate with wills is, oh, I'll just let the state figure it all out when I die. I won't have to think about things. What happens to your assets if you die without a will?
It's all ruled by the Interstate Succession Act. So it kind of goes according to who your next of kin is. For example, if you pass away without children, then your asset goes to your wife, right? If you pass away with spouse and children, 50% to spouse, the other 50% spread equally among your children. So that's sort of like that priority that goes down.
Okay. And the reason why you wouldn't want intestacy law to divide your estate would primarily because, I suppose for some people, abdicate them from the whole matter of deciding who gets what of the family. But if you have an estate large enough, you probably do want to keep those questions in mind, right? This is about expressing your wishes, your will.
Yep,
All right, Justin, before we let you go, any final thoughts here in Sing on radio about why we should do well to plan ahead when it comes to estate planning?
Yep, you can't take it with you go. You can't take the money with you when you go, right? But at least leave the money behind and distribute it clearly and fairly. Because like you said right at the beginning, pass on assets, don't pass on disputes.
Well said. Justin, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Total pleasure. Justin Chan is managing partner from Justin Chan Chambers LLP. This is Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Thank you for your company.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.